who's the customer? What problem are you trying to solve for them? All the other questions that may be in your mind, how am I going to get funded? Do I need to create a legal entity? Those are important questions, but they're sort of irrelevant unless you've figured out whether there's a real market customer for what you're trying to do.
This is Can Do Lessons from Savvy Montana Entrepreneurs, a podcast that explores why Montana leads the nation in entrepreneurship and business startups. I'm Arnie Sherman. If there is something happening in the entrepreneurial world in Montana, Paul Gladden probably has something to do with it. In 2008, Paul came to Montana armed with a degree from Oxford University and more than 15 years of experience working with Arthur Andersen and his own firm, MuseView. In 2009, Paul helped launch Hellgate Venture Network, a Missoula-based local entrepreneurship forum. When the University of Montana College of Business was chosen to be part of the prestigious Blackstone Launchpad, a national effort to provide viable pathways to entrepreneurship, Paul was the go-to choice to head it up. Since then, Paul has been a linchpin in many Montana entrepreneurship efforts. He is the co-founder of the Montana Code School, and he recently helped launch Accelerate Montana Rural Innovation Initiative with a $730,000 grant from the United States Economic Development Administration. Today on Can Do Lessons from Savvy Montana Entrepreneurs, Paul and I will discuss all things startup. He'll tell us what it takes to successfully launch a new business endeavor, particularly if you plan to work in a rural environment. Production support for this Can Do podcast comes from the Dennis and Phyllis Washington Foundation, dedicated to investing in people to improve the quality of their lives. And from the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montanans. And from Blackfoot, providing communication solutions for Montana businesses, plus opportunities like C2M Beta, an innovation lab aimed at helping startups thrive. C2MBeta.com. Paul, good to see you. Glad you could join me today on Can Do.
Thanks for having me.
So tell me about the history of the Launchpad and what role did the Blackstone Charitable Foundation have in that?
The Blackstone Charitable Foundation announced in around about the summer of 2013 that they were going to be bringing the Blackstone Launchpad program to Montana, both to the University of Montana and Montana State University. And the philosophy that I think the Blackstone Charitable Foundation brought to this is when they set up their foundation, Stephen Schwartzman, who's one of the founders of Blackstone, said, "We're entrepreneurs at heart. And we want to foster more entrepreneurship kind of across the U.S. So we want to put kind of our philanthropic efforts into that, but let's not reinvent the wheel." So they found a program down at the University of Miami called the Launchpad and said, "We really like that program. Let's see if we can scale that up." And think through Senator Tester's connections with folks at Blackstone when he heard they were looking to kind of expand or to bring Blackstone Launchpads to various college campuses across the country. They said, "Well, why don't you bring it to Montana?" That's sort of the genesis of how it came to Montana. And the philosophy of the Blackstone Launchpad is really to help students explore entrepreneurship as a viable career path.
And the foundation got its money from the Blackstone asset management firms.
Correct. Yes.
Which is billions and billions
Very
of dollars.
Very phenomenally successful.
Yes. So you've been the director for almost 6 years. What's that experience been like for you?
It's fantastic. Every day is different. That's the most exciting thing about my job. You never know who it is you're going to be meeting each day. We work with predominantly with students. But we also work with alumni. We work with faculty. We sometimes even work with members of the sort of the Montana community, not necessarily affiliated with UM, but maybe working on something entrepreneurial. And there may be an opportunity to get some of our students or even our faculty kind of working on that startup. So that engagement with entrepreneurs, aspiring entrepreneurs, it's infinitely diverse. The things they're working on, the things they need help with. So that's a lot of fun. And then part of our role is to then help both give them some guidance and coaching, but also connect them to other people and resources that can help them predominantly in the state, but also sometimes outside of state. And to do that, I also have to sort of network extensively with other people and organizations. So I have this constant job of engaging and interacting with people and trying to connect the dots and help people be successful with what they're trying to do.
And how open have other resources been to working with the Launchpad?
Very open. I mean, I think it's one of the distinctive things about entrepreneurship in Montana is how collaborative it is. Clearly, if you live in Montana for a few years, you hear the sort of the statements, right? That sort of Montana's just a village kind of with very long streets. And that's true. It's a very sort of community-oriented state. So it's incredibly easy. I can't think of an occasion where I've perhaps wanted to make an introduction, made a referral, and someone has said, no, I'm too busy. I don't have time to do that. People are always willing to have that conversation to try to help someone see what they can do to move, help that entrepreneur move forward with what they're working on.
I think our listeners can tell by listening to you that you weren't originally reared here in Montana.
Right.
So tell us your backstory. How'd you get here?
Yeah, it's a little convoluted, but grew up in the UK, went to Oxford University, and one of my very good friends that I actually met on the first day at Oxford, David Firth, married an American, moved out to the US, got a PhD at UCLA, and got hired at the University of Montana in what was then the School of Business as an MIS professor, which he's still there today. And when he and Mary moved here, they said, hey, we're moving to Missoula, to which I was, where the heck is Missoula? So obviously he encouraged me to come. And first visit, they picked me up at Missoula Airport and took me to Glacier, and we got chased by a bear. And that was my introduction to Missoula. And after two or three other trips out, after a while, I started my own research consulting business with ironically, given what I do at the Blackstone Launchpad, with a non-traditional student that David had introduced to me. We started that business back in around 2007. And after a couple of years, I was living in New York, and New York wanted to tax me some more. And I thought, well, this Missoula place seems pretty cool. I'm heading out there a couple of times a year. Maybe I should just make the move permanent. And I did, moved out in March 2008, and one of the best decisions I ever made.
How do you compare working here with businesses with your experience in the UK?
Well, and actually, a lot of my business experience in the UK was sort of international. It's working in Europe, did work a little in the US in the 90s. I think the key distinction for me, which I think makes sort of the work I do today so rewarding, is you can really see the impact that you have working in big cities with big corporations. I mean, you hope and believe that you're doing work that is sort of helping improve that business and move it forward, but it's much more difficult to sort of measure and see that at times. So the fact that I can see sort of the impact that I'm able to have helping kind of folks overcome hurdles or avoid kind of missteps, that's much more rewarding.
You have a degree in mathematics from Oxford, and you had a stint at Arthur Andersen Consulting. How did that prepare you for what you're doing now?
So it's actually one of my favorite sort of questions about mathematics is it an art or is it a science? And I think that's very true of entrepreneurship. There's a little bit of science to it. There's a little structure and methodology that you can adopt. But as you know, it's also very much an art. The answers are not always known. It's an exploration. So I think sort of mathematics taught me that sort of process of discovery and exploration, but then trying to connect the dots. And that's what I spend a lot of time doing, connecting the dots, connecting people, helping them figure out how the opportunity they're pursuing, what sort of resources or expertise or kind of market trends might be kind of helpful to them.
As you try to help connect the dots, are there common problems or common obstacles or common roadblocks that you see among the entrepreneurs you're working with here?
Yeah, absolutely. There are sort of common questions that they get asked, often also some sort of common misconceptions. I think one of the ones that we work hardest to educate students and sort of aspiring entrepreneurs is often the advice is, oh, you've got a startup idea, so you should write a business plan and just sort of take it to the bank. And that can work in some instances. There are some businesses for which that's a fit, but for most businesses, particularly if someone has maybe a sort of more innovative, kind of different idea, then we very much espouse what's referred to as the lean startup methodology, which is a much more iterative approach. Rather than build it and hope they'll come, you figure out what it is the customer will come for and then try to build around that. So we spend a lot of time educating folks around that. The quote I use most often in the Launchpad is a Peter Drucker quote. Peter Drucker is often referred to as sort of the father of management, prolific writer on kind of business and management theory. One of his quotes is, the purpose of a business is to create a customer. And it's amazing how at times that just stops the entrepreneur in their tracks as they're like, oh, yeah, I have this great idea, but I need to focus on who the customer is. And often they sort of don't see it because they are the customer, or they, at least their own experience is what's motivated them to start something. But they have to step back and say, oh, yeah, I know it's what I want, but do other people want that too? So that's a key part. That's the starting point really for us with any entrepreneur, is to help them understand who's the customer, what problem are you trying to solve for them? And really, all the other questions that may be in your mind, how am I going to get funded? Do I need to create a legal entity? Those are important questions, but they're sort of irrelevant unless you've figured out whether there's a real market customer for what you're trying to do.
On the topic of who's your customer, Who are your customers and where do they come from?
So students of any major, any school, undergrad, graduate, this is not just for business students. This is very much for students of any background. In many ways, some of the more exciting and interesting kind of startups are coming from folks from different kind of disciplines and fields. We're also open to faculty. It can be staff. So if there are staff on campus that have an innovative idea, we're happy to help them. And then we've worked extensively with alumni, sort of both here in Missoula and sort of across the state and even across the country. So we're happy to work with them as well. So those are our primary clients.
You alluded to within the Launchpad, but you're involved in a number of other initiatives. You're involved in the Code School, the Hellgate Venture Network. Mm-hmm. You are an adjunct faculty member. You're involved in Accelerate Montana's Rural Innovation Initiative. How do you juggle and manage all of this, Paul?
Well, I think they all fit under a theme. All of those that you just listed, I think, except for the Hellgate Venture Network, are essentially programs at the University of Montana. And most of them fall under the umbrella of what we call Accelerate Montana, which is really our portfolio of economic development programs. So as a state institution, we know we have a sort of responsibility to help kind of foster the economic environment. So we have a number of programs there, including the Launchpad, the Code School you mentioned, but there are also other programs, the Small Business Development Center, the PTAC program, which stands for Procurement Technical Assistance Center, helps businesses sell to the government. We have the Montana World Trade Center, which obviously you're very familiar with. We have Montec, which is the university's incubator facility just across the river. And then we have the Montana Code School, which you mentioned, which is a coding boot camp. And then more recently, our Accelerate Montana Rural Innovation Initiative. They are all essentially helping businesses get started or helping those businesses grow, whether it's looking for funding, looking to access international markets, looking for kind of talent. And now with our Rural Innovation Initiative, looking to sort of expand our outreach into rural communities. So that's really how I think about those programs and the Hellgate Venture Network, which is an entrepreneurial networking group. It's something I started before I came to UM, but as part of fostering that entrepreneurial community. So that's really what we're about and how I think about how those things fit together.
Under the continuing theme of customers, do we have enough customers for all of those ventures?
Yeah, we're plenty busy. Yeah, we don't have enough hours in the day to necessarily do all the things we would like to do. We put those customers first. So sometimes there's sort of programmatic things we would like to do that we don't necessarily get the time to execute on. But we're not short of Montana as a phenomenally entrepreneurial and problem-solving kind of community of people. So there's almost a sort of an endless stream of people coming in looking for help and guidance.
And in your opinion, why are we that entrepreneurial?
I think it sort of goes back to some of that sort of pioneering spirit, right? You're on some windblown part of kind of Montana and on your own, you've got to figure things out. But also you call on your neighbors to help you as well. And I think that underpins some of this collaborative spirit that we were discussing kind of earlier.
When you first meet with a new startup, what are you looking for?
Actually, it's not so much what I'm looking for. We're not the Shark Tank, so we're not trying to judge whether their idea is any good. We're more about how can we help them be successful. So one of the first questions we always ask, we start with obviously who are they, where are they from, sort of what brought them to the launch pad, and what are they working on or what idea do they have? But then pretty quickly the question is, what does success look like? Because to you and I, that could be very different. Some people may be aspiring to be the next sort of Elon Musk or Mark Zuckerberg, but others, they want to be their own boss. And for them, being their own boss, perhaps even with no employees, starting their own bookkeeping business or opening a yoga studio, that may be what they're excited to do. And others are anywhere in between across that spectrum, right? They're hoping to create a small but growing business that employs 10, 20 people in their community.
What do you think the choice point for a young entrepreneur is between starting something or taking over something that already exists? Do you help them do that as well?
We will absolutely help them do that. I think that is a tremendous opportunity, and I know it's a topic you've spend time looking at in terms of sort of retiring kind of boomers across the state, and that folks like Good Works Ventures are looking at that as well. And that's certainly something. It's interesting how entrepreneurship has sort of become synonymous with startups, but to me that's a narrowing of the definition.
Right. It's just as entrepreneurial to take over some business that's been around for 30, 40 years with a new energy and vigor and enthusiasm and vision for the future.
Yeah, I mean, entrepreneurship, going back to the French, is sort of the taking of risk in some way, right? So if you're going to run a business, whether it's from scratch or taking over an existing business, but kind of the buck stops with you, then you're being an entrepreneur.
You're bringing up all these lead-in words, the buck. Everyone's looking for money. What is the state of funding for startups and even for taking over existing businesses, particularly in a place like Montana?
It's way better than when I moved to the state kind of 11 years ago. We now have essentially two venture capital funds. So Next Frontier Capital, which has obviously been around for a few years, but then Two Bear Capital that's just been announced in recent months. We have a very strong angel group, Frontier Angel Fund. So I think those are great. We also have great relationships with many of the sort of local banks here in Missoula and across the state. So we have a lot of entrepreneurs that do establish good relationships with the banks and get some of their funding there. But actually, this is a topic that we're spending a lot of time discussing and exploring right now, that there are some emerging investment models and sort of investment philosophies that are really expanding the opportunities, I think, for entrepreneurs in Montana to get funding. The data that I've seen quoted a few times is that essentially about 86% of startups are not a good fit for VC or for bank. But now there are alternative, what are sometimes referred to as kind of revenue-based funding models. There are also investors coming from what is also sometimes referred to as the impact investment world, where they're still looking for a financial return, but maximizing that financial return is maybe not as important. They're interested in the impact the business can have on the community or the environment or other factors. And those kind of things, I think, resonate very strongly with a lot of entrepreneurs in Montana and their commitment to sort of the environment and community, as well as with particularly with the millennial generation of students that we're largely serving through the Launchpad. So I think that the funding by no means is easy. It's never easy to get funding for a startup, but I think the opportunities are growing and getting kind of stronger by the day.
Well, at one point, there was a school of thought you invest in the best idea. Then for a while, there was a school of thought you invest in the best person. What's the current thinking?
I think it's still the latter there, that it's about the individual. That's what I see. I think that's really interesting to us. The nature of the Launchpad program is we'll sit and do an initial consultation, help them figure out maybe what's their first step or their next step. But it's up to the entrepreneur to then book the next session to come back and say, okay, I did that, or I tried to do that. Here's what I learned, and then figure out the next step. So that, to me, is sort of the test of the entrepreneurial gene, is not kind of how good is the idea, but what's their motivation for figuring it out. And certainly what we always hear from sort of VC, from venture investors, angel investors, is they're looking for individuals that are motivated to figure out how to solve the problem they're trying to solve and are open to coaching, open to the feedback from their customers. So to me, it's very much about the individual or the team that comes together to pursue that idea.
And it's also how much risk they're willing to take.
Sure.
And how much sweat they're willing to put in the game, which mm-hmm. most investors are looking for. They don't want to make it too easy, and they want
Absolutely.
To show that the person who is leading the charge, you know, is fully willing to take a bullet along with everyone else.
Absolutely.
We're speaking with Paul Gladen, director of the Blackstone Launchpad at the University of Montana, about all things entrepreneurial. Support for this episode of CanDo is provided by the Dennis and Phyllis Washington Foundation, dedicated to investing in people to improve the quality of their lives, and from the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montanans. And from Blackfoot, providing communication solutions for Montana businesses, plus opportunities like C2M Beta, an innovation lab aimed at helping startups thrive. C2MBeta.com. So walk us through a success story.
So I think one software startup that we've worked with from time to time over the last 2 or 3 years, a company called Thomas, T-O-M-I-S. And what I love about it is both sort of the drive and motivation of the entrepreneur, and they've been kind of creating jobs and kind of raising funding, is it's an illustration of people using technology to solve a sort of Montana-ish problem. So Thomas stands for Tour Operator Marketing Intelligence System. So it was started by Evan Tipton, who has a background in academic master's in sort of, I think, environmental kind of tourism. So he noticed that a lot of what they term tour operators, which is often people like fly fishing guides that we're obviously very familiar with, right, here in Montana, those are often very small businesses. The folks in it are mostly passionate about fly fishing or kind of hiking or other sort of activities. They don't have skills and expertise to market kind of their businesses. So most of that marketing needs to be online these days. They need to have a website, they need to have social media, they need to be promoting themselves. So he built a web platform to essentially manage that process and build sort of intelligence into it, and therefore enable those small businesses to have sort of high quality, effective kind of digital kind of social media marketing. So that's one where I'm excited by what they're doing and what they're achieving. And I think a good illustration of just our ability to be a sounding board, particularly for Evan, as he sort of thought through some of those kind of key decision points as he built the business.
And how quickly have they grown over the last 2 or 3 years?
I'm not sure what employee headcount they're up to, but I think it's certainly kind of 20, 30, maybe even 40 employees these days.
Which is a big tech company.
Absolutely.
In a place like Montana.
Absolutely, yeah.
It's also instructive to hear about ventures that don't quite make it.
Right.
So do you have a story you can tell us about that? You know, obviously protecting anonymity here.
Sure. Well, the story I like to tell on this is a student who came into the Launchpad once and said, hey, I have this idea. It's like kind of, as I wander around campus, there seem to be a lot of sort of empty kind of rooms, classrooms and things. Maybe they could be used by people for kind of meetings and stuff. And I'm like, okay, it sounds like an interesting idea. You need to go sort of validate kind of, is that feasible? He came back within about an hour. He'd found somebody sort of in facilities or whatever and said, yeah, there's a whole bunch of logistical kind of problems and challenges to that. He's like, okay, I'll move on to the next idea. I mean, he failed super fast, but we don't view failure as sort of terminal. Failure is kind of, what did you learn from that? How does that help you think about the next idea you have? So, okay, I need to go do some research and some validation. Investors are often very leery of someone that says, nobody else is doing this, because they want to know, well, why is nobody trying to solve this problem? There should be somebody out there that agrees this is a problem worth solving, even if they're going about it a different way from you. And that's how you differentiate yourself as an entrepreneur, as a startup. Say, okay, I'm solving a problem that maybe has been solved, but there are some people that don't find the solution very kind of appetizing.
So give me 3 things that a startup must tackle in order to have a chance for success.
First thing is, can you figure out a customer? Who is the customer? What problem are you solving? And how do you differentiate? So you can solve the problem, as I sort of give a simple example of this. Basic human need, right? We all need to feed ourselves from time to time. We have options for that. I mean, even in Missoula, we've got a range of different restaurants, from kind of McDonald's and Taco Bell to kind of local casual dining places like Five on Black to higher end restaurants like kind of Plonk and The Pearl. They all basically do the same thing, right? They give you food to sustain you, but they do that in addressing different kind of what we term pains and gains. So sometime the pain might be you don't have much time, or you don't have much money, or the gain is maybe you're looking for something healthy, or maybe you're looking for something that will be a great evening with kind of friends. It's more about the social occasion than it is necessarily about the food. So it's both who's your customer, what problem are you solving, but also how are you differentiating from others. And the second part of that is, it's not enough for you to just have that thought through in your head. You need to go out and validate that. So go do research, whether that's surveys, interviews, focus groups, a lot of observation. If you've got tangible products, there's fantastic intelligence out there in terms of like Amazon reviews or TripAdvisor reviews. You can learn a lot about your customers, what they want, what they dislike, what frustrates them. So that's really sort of the starting point, is what is your value proposition and how do you validate that? Then the next stage is to start to think through the process of sort of, how do you execute? How do you move from just concept into starting something? And this lean startup methodology that I referred to earlier has this concept of the minimum viable product, which is essentially, what's the simplest thing you could put out there that a customer would say, oh, yeah, that kind of would address my need. That's kind of interesting. Well, that's kind of novel. That's kind of better than what I have. Eric Ries, who wrote the book on this, said you should sort of be embarrassed by your MVP, because it's so sort of basic and sort of stuck together with sticking plasters and things like that. But that's the best way to get feedback. Get the feedback soon. We said fail fast. That's also kind of learn fast. So get something out there, get feedback, iterate. So those are really the things we're encouraging, is really around validating there's a market and a customer for it, and getting that feedback, and then starting on an iterative loop.
Is there an extra challenge for companies in small towns or in rural areas?
It's a double-edged sword. I mean, sometimes it's a positive. You can try. It's a small community, but you can test things out here because it's a collaborative community. It's often easy to potentially get feedback, subject to whether the product or service has the kind of customers you're looking for. If you're doing sort of research commercialization, it may be that the industry or the sector in which you're creating a solution for is not here in Montana, so you've got to kind of reach out elsewhere. But for a lot of sort of more consumer-oriented things, this is sometimes kind of a nice market to test some things out in.
So the three-year startup phase of Blackstone funding the Launchpad has gone by, and they're still involved, but not to the extent they were. Does that allow the Launchpad to expand its mission, refocus its mission, recharge what it's doing? Do you have more leeway now?
No, I'm not sure our sort of focus and mission has changed, because I think the philosophy that I mentioned earlier from the original Launchpad at the University of Miami is still, I think it's just such a sort of foundationally strong kind of principle that we continue to focus on doing that. We would like to have more funding to be able to sort of broaden kind of our programs and drill a little deeper on some of those things. But there wouldn't be restrictions from Blackstone. In many ways, the relationship with Blackstone has been strengthened due to partnership that they've announced about 18 months ago with Techstars, which is one of the world's sort of premier or the leading accelerator programs. So that works with high-tech startups to literally accelerate them through their launch process. So we continue to kind of have great benefits to being part of the Blackstone Launchpad global network.
I want to loop back to 2009. You started the Hellgate Venture Network. What was the impetus for that, and where is it now, 10 years later?
There was a workshop at the Holiday Inn, downtown Missoula. A venture capitalist was doing a one-day workshop on how to raise money from VCs. And I had my research consulting business for a couple of years. Frankly, didn't know a lot about VCs, and so like, let's go figure out kind of what this is all about. And this is April 2009. The economy sort of in Missoula and globally is about as bad as it's going to get. And there were like 100 people in the room at the Holiday Inn. I'm like, kind of, who are all these people?
That's a big crowd.
And looked across the room and ended up chatting with Lady Dawn McGee, who's with Good Works Ventures, who I mentioned a short while ago. And Dawn and I sort of got chatting, and like, we were both relatively new to town. Who are all these people, and what are they doing? What are they working on? So we said, well, why don't we just see if we can get a few people together and start a conversation? So created a LinkedIn group, called it the Hellgate Venture Network. Said, hey, we're going to meet in kind of the bar at the Holiday Inn next week, Thursday, 4:30. And if you're interested in kind of entrepreneurship and startups, come along. And I think probably about a dozen people came along, and we're like, oh, people turned up and they thought it was fun and interesting. And like, so should we do it again? I'm like, yeah, let's do it again. So we did, and we've done it pretty much every month since. And we've tinkered around with the format, but now have it, I think, pretty dialed in. We start at 4:30. We're hosted by different businesses and organizations around Missoula. We provide a little liquid refreshment, kind of some beer and some kind of soft drinks as well. Start at 4:30 with networking. Then at 5, we just go around the room, kind of just one-liner, who are you, where are you from? And then we select an entrepreneur each month to give us 10 minutes. And literally, we put them on the clock 10 minutes. And then at the end of the 10 minutes, actually, we tell them they don't have to use the whole 10 minutes. Sometimes they go shorter. Then we do a little bit of Q&A, probably for about 10 or 15 minutes, and then we go back to networking. And on average, these days, we're getting 30, 40, 50 people at our meetings, which is fantastic. And we see both people, some people have been, were at our first meeting, still come from time to time, but there's always new people, which is always encouraging to see new people move into the community, new people have got an idea. And it's sort of a peer support network. Being an entrepreneur can be a at times lonely, scary, what the heck am I doing? Should I be doing this? So to find yourself in a room with other people that are doing the same and or work with entrepreneurs as well, I think is a very sort of comforting experience for people to know they're not alone in what they're doing.
Missoula has an incredibly low unemployment rate. We have one of the fastest growing economy, if not the fastest growing economy in the state of Montana. What's happening here that has led to that acceleration?
I think it's a combination of things. Clearly, being a university town brings that diversity of thought. And Missoula has that reputation as well, right? It is this more sort of keep Missoula weird. It's got more diverse thinking and diverse people and backgrounds. And I think that creates a healthy environment for people to feel comfortable about exploring their ideas. So I think there's some inherent sort of chemistry, and then there have been a sort of few triggers and sort of some inspiring sort of entrepreneurs, people like sort of Tom Sturgis with ATG and their recent acquisition by Cognizant, and people like Michael Fitzgerald at Submittable and Elke and Dory with Mamalode. I mean, there are a range of people you can point to that have shown people the way that you can do kind of fun, innovative, entrepreneurial things, and that you'll be supported and encouraged in what you're doing. So it's an awesome sort of combination of all those factors.
Among our previous guests in the venture world, they have talked about the challenges of diversity in terms of helping new startups. What's your take, and what are you involved in to encourage diversity?
That's something that's incredibly important. That's maybe sort of number one on our list of things we think about. We have a program, the Launchpad, run by my colleague Morgan Slumberger, who's the assistant director in the Launchpad, called Pursue Your Passion. That's a program actually was initiated by Jackie Moore, who is a Regents Professor of Marketing at the College of Business. And she observed that we had very few students, female students, competing in the Startup Challenge, our startup competition, a few years ago, and that we needed to do something to proactively change that. So she launched the Pursue Your Passion program, which Morgan has picked up and continue to develop and evolve. And actually, in parallel to that, we received some funding about 3-4 years ago from the Kauffman Foundation, which is pretty much the leading foundation in the US for kind of entrepreneurial kind of programs and research, to look at the issue of women's participation. And in particular, so that the macro data, both in the US and globally, is that women are roughly 1/3 of all kind of entrepreneurs. And obviously, they are statistically pretty much 50% of the population, so they're underrepresented. And there are a whole host of potential reasons and kind of theories and perceptions around why that's true. But we used the grant funding from the Kauffman Foundation to research student attitudes, because we noticed that we actually had the same level of participation in the Launchpad. About 1/3 of the people coming to the Launchpad were women. And it's at a campus that actually has slightly more women than men, and a program that really has little barriers to entry other than scheduling a meeting and coming in and having a conversation. It's like, why are we not seeing enough women? So we did research that we surveyed about 1,000 students across campus. And what we learned from that survey was that women definitely have very different perceptions to men on a number of aspects of entrepreneurship. They view it as kind of more risky. They view themselves as not having good ideas. They potentially are intimidated by going to sort of networking meetings and those kind of things. So the Pursue Your Passion program is sort of a response to that, which is really focused on how do we create environments that are supportive to women entrepreneurs? How do we help them gain confidence, evaluate risk kind of on a rational basis? So that program that Morgan's done a great job on building and developing, that program is one key focus for us around more inclusive entrepreneurship.
And what about Native American
participation? So with our new Rural Innovation Initiative grant from the Economic Development Administration, a key component of that is to engage in Indian country. And as you may be aware, at the University of Montana, we have the American Indian Business Leaders Student Group, which was actually, it's now a national organization, but was founded here at UM. So we have those able students participating in that kind of Rural Innovation Initiative, where we're working with them to explore how can we help foster sort of innovation or entrepreneurial thinking kind of across the reservations, across the state, and try to sort of change some of the dynamics in those environments. So those are two key initiatives for us that are very important to changing that dynamic. And it's very true. I mean, we say about inclusiveness across business in general, that it's not just the nice thing or the right thing to do. You're getting better quality ideas and thinking when you're engaging kind of different perspectives and different kind of groups of people. So it's incredibly important to us.
Paul, what's your perspective on nonprofit entrepreneurship, and are you involved in that?
Absolutely. Yeah, we work with a lot of people with nonprofit ideas. As I sort of articulate it, it's not for the purpose of profit. So if you're a nonprofit organization, you still essentially have to be profitable. You have to have more income than you have expenses on a sustainable basis. Otherwise, your organization is going out of existence. So starting or running a not-for-profit is just as challenging as running a for-profit business. The question is just what you do with the profit, right? If it's your own business, you can keep the profits. If you've got investors, you need to return them to the investors. If you're a not-for-profit organization, you're going to plow that profit back into your mission. So we are, as I said earlier, we're sort of agnostic on the idea. So if somebody wants to start a not-for-profit organization, we're just as happy to help them. The other trend I would say, which is really interesting, is the emergence of benefit corporations and B Corps. So these are legal entity structures that enable businesses to sort of balance a little bit of that, to focus on generating profit, but also potentially to compromise the amount of profit they make because they want to focus on other stakeholders, whether it's customers, employees, kind of their community. So we're seeing a lot of interest in that, and there are increasingly investors that are open to those models as well. So that's often a conversation we have early on with someone who comes in, maybe thinking they want to start a not-for-profit, to say, well, what does success look like for you? What are the outcomes you're after? Let's figure out what the most appropriate sort of business entity structure might be for you.
Paul, it's always great to talk to you. It's great to catch up with you. And let's keep on keeping Missoula weird.
And beard.
And beard. Thank you for being here.
Pleasure.
I appreciate your listening to Can Do Lessons from Savvy Montana Entrepreneurs, produced by Peter Hoag and Beth Ann Austin in association with Montana Public Radio. For comments, recommendations for future guests, or general information, please go to mtpr.org. There you can also find previous guests' contact information and content from all our shows. Join me next time when our guests will be Mary Stranahan and Dawn McGee of GoodWorks Ventures. GoodWorks focuses on Montana businesses they believe can be an overall force for good and positive change. Once again, I'm Arnie Sherman, wishing you peace and prosperity.